Okay, here's a second attempt at this. This is me trying a way to do these that starts with an outline rather than finishes with an outline. What I've done in the earlier ones is say what I've had to say, then listen back to it and turn that into an outline. In this case, I listened to what you were saying, writing an outline, and adding small notes into the outline that I used to put together a coherent outline for what I'm going to say this time. And to be clear about this, I'm several of your voicemail casts back. There was the one you did on the 22nd, and then there's the Andy Sylvester one. There's one you did on Wikipedia, which we can make a separate thing, I think, at any time. And then there's one that's welcoming me to New York that I have not heard yet. So I'm so backlogged on that, but I want to go back to the one that I took the trouble to take lots of notes on and to create an outline about. So that's how I'm working on this. And it's a new approach. And the outline that's going to go with this has two parts. It's an outline. And actually, it has three parts. There's two that are from your stimulus, and then there's my response. There's more like call and response. That's a better way of putting it. And about listening, and then a new direction that you want to take this thing. And that really comes down to how developers and users dig together. And I'm your kind of an alpha user on this and around outlining and all that. And then my response to that, which I put together in a way that I hope worked. I really need to be more coherent, and that's a hard thing for me. It was one of the ways that Moore was so useful to me, because it was such a good outliner, and it helped me think, and we'll go into that. But I'm looking for some of the same thing in how I put this together. So I'll start with just a high level outline of your cast. And this is my outline for what you said. One part was about listening, another was about the whole new direction, which is first about developers and users digging together, and I'm one of your alpha users. And you talked about how the early history of podcasting worked. And as a side note to that is how I didn't get good enough credit for that, and we can possibly fix that in Wikipedia. But how you started with Adam Curry and then Chris Lydon, both of which I remember really well, and then others at Berkman, and I might add to what you said, that the blogging group persisted for years after you had moved on as a fellow at Berkman. You set a whole lot of wheels spinning that continued to spin, and that was good. And then back to Adam, you said, and then the whole thing exploded, which it did. I mean, podcasting is immense at this point. And that's a subject for probably many back and forths in the future. And then about conversations and having a meaningful one. And you talked to us about writing software for yourself. I've always thought that the best apps, the best inventions are ones that somebody makes for themselves and then turns out to have usefulness to the world. And you gave the history of Think Tank. And so rather than go deep into that, I'm going to go with my response to it. And so first, and I have three sections under that, which is a new approach at my end, and which I just talked about a little bit by doing this. I'm looking at an outline while recording it. Easier to do that, by the way, with Audacity on a second screen than it is with my phone, which just goes dark, and I don't know if it's recording or not. And then about listening and about Think Tank and more, and the history of that. I once took a long road trip with my sister. It was last summer. And she said to me, you know, we had not spent that much time, like 2.5 weeks together, since we were children, really. I mean, I went away for high school. In the summer, she went to camps, and she was a camp counselor and all kinds of things. And then I went to college. She went to college mostly somewhere else, and then went in the Navy for 20 years. So, and we've lived in different places and had very independent lives. And so we really, though we're close and we talk a lot and the rest, we're apart. But we were together for, 2.5 weeks or something. And you can get on each other's nerves doing that. You know, her driving drove me crazy. I won't say why. And my way of listening drove her crazy because she likes to tell long stories. And as I told her when she was complaining about it, I have trouble hearing the end of a joke. And that's not a joke. That's because there are wheels spinning in my mind when somebody's saying things. And part of it is listening, and part of it is responding, and part of it is organizing it in my head. And it's very attention deficit. You can look at it in a negative way that way. But it's also collaborative in another kind of way. Doesn't work with long jokes. It does work with some other things. And I think also of, and I say this respectfully, there are two people who both of us know who actually interrupt themselves because they're listening to themselves and think of the other thing to say and can't help externalizing their internal monologue. And those are Bob Frankston and Tim Berners-Lee. I don't know Tim that well, but I've only met him a few times, but I know Bob really well, and I don't think he'd be offended in the least at my saying that. I think that's part of what makes him original. And I think he not only interrupts himself, he listens by interrupting. He'll interrupt you as you're talking, either to get clarification or to haul the whole conversation off in some other direction that's in his head. That's him. That actually, if you work with Bob for a while, you kind of understand how to make that work. I don't know if Tim does that or not. But this is a really different discipline that you're introducing here, which is where I have to listen. And I can stop. I can go back. You know, I can respond in ways that you can hear and come back with something. Oh, that's what you're saying. But we could be a bit more organized about it and programmatic in a different kind of way. And what I'm doing is I'm taking side notes as I'm listening to you and putting in an outline. I'd love to listen to you on a walk, but what I've found, I've done that a couple times. What I find is I end up spending an hour and a half listening to 20 minutes of talk. I'd rather listen to 20 minutes of talk slowly enough with a stop and start to take notes on it than try to remember afterwards what was said and then go off in my own digressions. I don't know how useful this conversation we're having is going to be for the rest of the world, but except to say there are very different ways that people work, and you and I are working on a good way to have a new dance where we're digging together. So let's see, about listening, I've already gone into why I'm not good at it. Oh, outlining, yeah. Outlining so much helps with this. It really does. And my old habits with more, the keyboard commands and how they work, are really useful for that. They're just huge. And, you know, and another a thought about that is, in a way, what I'm doing here is making a presentation to you, not a very good one in a presentation-ish way, but with the outliner as speaker's notes. And we're co-thinking. And in a way, I'm giving you code you could debug. And that's, you know, tell me what I missed or overlooked. And I could also run with what you've said. I'd like to do that with what you said about Think Tank and more. You know, you mentioned that, though you don't remember me personally, and I don't remember you by name either. I just knew you as one of the guys at the booth. But you talked about how you were in the basement at Comdex in 1984. And you could tell when people were coming up to the booth that they had a purpose. And I've worked a lot of booths, and I know what that looks like, especially when Linux Journal used to have a booth. You knew the people coming up. You could even tell what they were going to do. It's kind of like, you know, cops will say that when they pull somebody over for speeding or something, there are like four or five kinds of people. Some will want to get out of the car. Some will want to stay in the car. Some will want to argue. Some will be totally flustered and not know where their driver's license is and that kind of thing. But I think when you're at a booth, you see people with a purpose. And I don't remember whether I just happened to see Think Tank and saw Thought Processor or whether I'd already heard about it. But I remember talking to you or maybe Peter, your brother, about it and being totally taken with the possibilities. I did not have a PC at the time. I was there for my company. We did not even have a computer at the company. The first computer we did have was the very first Macintosh, original Macintosh 128 sold in North Carolina at that time. But I think, by the way, I think Gordon Eubanks hired me to do PR and marketing for Symantec at that time because he knew I understood more. I gave my pitch in more. I gave the presentation using more, and I demonstrated I deeply understood that product and loved it. And I think that made a huge amount of difference to him. And I don't know whether he understood it, but he understood that I understood it. And as a historic fact, Bernie DeKoven is the guy who said, You need to know Dave Weiner better and pay close attention to what he's writing online. I mean, that was about the extent of it. I mean, I don't know how to what degree Bernie actually collaborated with you on more or on anything, but he was very encouraging of my seeking you out for that, which I did at different points. And I saw you as a correspondent back then, somebody I could write to. I loved what you were doing with DaveNet, which ended up being blogging to a large degree. And I love that the entire corpus of DaveNet is still out there and you can point back to it. And I remember what I did was I wrote something to you. I had actually had a kind of a weird fantasy that I could write for DaveNet. I saw this, maybe you could have a publication that I could be part of. And your response was so amazing. You wrote back and you said, you didn't even know me very well or at all, I don't think. You said, this isn't you. You're writing as if you're performing for an audience. Talk to me and talk to the world the same way. It was great coaching. It was great editing. I've had some great editors in my time, and that was one of them. And I love that you didn't hold back. I mean, you were critical, but in a respectful way, in the sense that you wanted to hear what I had to say. You recognized that I was a good writer. You knew that a writer needed an editor, and that you were in the business of making tools while you were also being a writer as well. You may have even been still writing for Wired at the time, or still had the experience of having been involved with Wired and writing for other publications. We were both writers in that way. But you were a writer who came up with software that I was already using. And that it not only meant a lot to me, it put me on the path to blogging. And I was already blogging. I mean, I don't know if you remember this, but I have a thing. It's on Searles.com called Reality 2.0. We now have actually Linux Journal podcast that still survives called the same thing. If you look at all of the early things that I wrote in that was my DaveNet, Reality 2.0. But they were things that I wrote for example, PC Magazine and PC Week that were unpublished. I could not, for InfoWorld, I pitched myself to all of them. They did not like what I wrote. And they didn't like what I wrote because I wasn't shilling for vendors. I wasn't doing the typical thing. I was being myself on your advice, among others, right? But that was, as a writer, I've always been a square peg. It's not amazing to me, but it is an interesting fact to me that, and I say this without any vanity at all, I don't think I'm the best writer in the world. I think, for example, John McPhee, almost everybody writing for The New Yorker are better writers technically and in a magazine-y way and in a nonfiction booky kind of way. But I'm damn good at what I do, and I'm good enough that I would think that any good magazine should want my writing. And two in my experience. One was The Sun in North Carolina. I don't know what the website is. I'll look it up. And Cy Safransky was the editor there. I sought him out, but he liked my writing and was a great editor. And the other was Linux Journal, when Phil Hughes came to me and said, I'd like you to write for us, even though you don't know shit about Linux and you're not that technical. I like your writing. I think you're damn good. That was it. And I've been turned down pretty much by the rest of them when I've sought him out. And I think the reason for that, I don't write for a normal audience. I don't write for readers that it's not magazine writing. It's not about what's just shit that's going on now, especially. I don't even know how to describe it, but I had the best sense of writing for a readership, not an audience, a readership, with my Frontier-based blog, the one that you prepared for me and that I wrote on. When I moved to WordPress at Berkman, on a Harvard blog, I was very aware that I was writing on a Harvard blog. I was also very constrained, and I still am, by the WordPress format. It's conducive to writing essays in long form. It's not something where I can go blah, and I want to be able to go blah. And you made that for you, and you made that, and it worked for me, and I still miss it. And that's what I'm doing, in a way, with what I'm writing in this little outline that I'm speaking from here. So anyway, My purpose here, by the way, is not to go into any into writing, especially. I'm just commenting on where, to some degree, where blogging came from. That's a digression from what you were talking about on this particular podcast. I want to tie it in with outlining, and I'm not doing a very good job. It's also late at night right now, and I'm really tired, and I pulled a bunch of muscles in my neck and my back, and I can't sleep because laying down causes pain. So that's slowed me down a lot, but that's not so much an excuse as just an explanation why I'm not as good as I would be in the morning, but I got shit happening in the morning, and I don't want to hold back anymore. Anyway, I want to go back into more. You told a great story, actually, in the Wikipedia podcast, which you may visit later, but about how what you did with Moore was take kind of the kitchen sink of stuff and pushed it together and made it a product, and it turned out to be a hit. I think Moore really was the very first presentation software, much more so than even though Persuasion and PowerPoint ended up kind of beating it in the marketplace as presentation software. But in terms of their construction, they were lesser beasts. They were more about making art than making a point. And because Moore started with what you're thinking about and turning that into what it called bullet charts, that could be slides, it subordinated the bullet points to the thinking, to making points with it. What happened with Persuasion, but especially with PowerPoint, which is really the only presentation software now, is that it was about making bullet charts. It was about making, all about bullets, which became speaker's notes. Most people, when they make a presentation, use the bullets there as speaker's notes. You look at them later and you say, okay, that's what the guy was talking about. But I'm not sure I get the point. There's a roster of stuff that they're saying. But they're really speaker's notes rather than making a point. And Moore was different that way because Moore started with Think Tank. It was basically Think Tank turned into presentations. And I gave so many presentations using that, and it killed. It was great. I didn't use the tree chart, whatever that was called, as much, though that was helpful. It was interesting. To me, the subtle and important thing about Moore was that it was a great way to think out loud and to write that you could turn into a talk. And that's kind of what I'm looking at right now in my little outliner. And now what I'm going to do, because I've just gone through this outline and my response outline, I'm going to go back to what you said just to see if I've missed anything. Yeah, one is conversations. You said you want to have a meaningful one here, not one in the markets or conversations sense, which is kind of like the big line in the Clutrain manifesto, but in a more productive sense. I'll save this one for later, but what we meant by markets or conversations was not the way the world took it. But there is a Clutrain talk we can have here. Oh, here's another thing. My side note listening to what you said about conversations was that I not only used everything in Moore, I used everything in Excel early on, and before that was what they called Multiplan, back when it was simple. Also PowerPoint and Quicken, which is a way to do your checkbook. All were small and simple enough to do that. I could know the entirety of Moore. I could also know the entirety of Excel. And I was damn good at it. When I look at Excel now, I don't know what the hell that is. I have to spend a half an hour to start to get it again because the old habits don't work. It's not the same. It's something else. And PowerPoint is getting much more complicated as well. I haven't used Quicken in years, so that's a different thing. But I wanted to say there was a time that I could use everything in something. Yeah, you said it's a privilege to make software for people who are self-aware and inquiring for themselves. Yeah. I want to hit pause, but I'm not going to do it. Let's see. And you have your TEDS idea, and this is where you want to go. And how RSS was a model for what blogging was about and how it worked. And how others did a terrible job with it when they went off the ranch. What happened to you, for you, or around you, but your experience with what was done with RSS is a lot like my experience with Clutrain and the intention economy. And it's they're similar in the sense that we both got what we were trying to do better than anybody else did. and we're both best at giving ourselves our own feedback at it. And finding that attempts to take it elsewhere go nowhere, so why follow? You're giving me advice on going to a podcasting event, like knowing that it was going to go the wrong way. And it's here in New York. I thought I might go anyway. I sent a note to the organizer that pretty much said, what you want to talk about here is stuff that I've written a lot about. I've been around this a long time. I can add a lot of value to it. But I don't want to pay the money to go. I don't want to go unless I can really contribute. If not on stage from some kind of a somewhat privileged position. I haven't heard anything back yet. That's not a knock. He may never have seen the email. I don't know. But I know what you're talking about there, even if I'm not repeating it well enough, which is I know... You knew with RSS what was right. And renaming it really, you know, from what was it, Rich Site Summary or something like that, that Netscape had to Really Simple Syndication. Oh, my God, what a great name. Really Simple Syndication. That's what it was and ought to be, right? And the intention economy is, I think, pretty self-explanatory. You know, build an economy on customers' intentions. Let's do that. But very few people got what I was talking about. And they didn't get what I was talking about with markets, or the four of us are talking about with markets and conversations. Anyhow, that's about it. This is an experiment in doing a talk from an outline and being a bit coherent about it. And we're now at 25 minutes. That's enough. So on to the next one.